Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson. You know, before they were legends of outlaw country, they were lost souls looking for their sound. Don't miss Mandy Moore and the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the rise of outlaw country music and its biggest stars. Hear how one woman's vision in her tiny living room, far from Nashville's Music Row, became the epicenter of a musical movement. Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in The Boar's Nest. Listen now at audible.com/The Boar's Nest. Hey, it's Bobby Bones. Hey, I just want to say thanks to everybody who has stepped up for the St. Jude kids. St. Jude's doing incredible work fighting childhood cancer. And because of donations like the ones that you give, families never receive a bill ever from St. Jude for treatment, travel, housing, food, none of that. Help St. Jude stop childhood cancer. Become a partner in hope. Get this awesome new This Shirt Saves Lives shirt. It's going to look great on you. So join all the doctors, researchers, and me in this fight. All right, text the word Bobby. It's only six numbers to 785-833. Again, text the word Bobby to just these six numbers, 785-833. This is the year to stop overpaying for your family plan. So choose a Straight Talk wireless family plan. Unlimited data, talk, and text on a reliable 5G network. And you can get a new line starting at $25 per line per month for four lines, plus taxes and fees and no contracts. That's good decision making. Available at Walmart and on straighttalk.com. Family plan discount with four lines, all on the Silver Unlimited plan. Not combinable with auto pay discount. In times of traffic, your data may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Video streams at up to 480p. All right, welcome to episode 334 with Jimmy Robbins, songwriter, 10 number ones, great guitar player. His story is wild about his first year in Nashville. He's like, all right, let's see how this goes. And then his first year, it's like, bang, bang, bang. He's from Raleigh, North Carolina. His career includes the Warped Tour, a solo album with Motown Records, writing pop top lines for Disney. You know, we get into the age he started touring, which is crazy. And, you know, he had Blake Shelton. Sure, it'd be cool if you did. You don't have to throw back your pretty pink lemonade. Also, Thomas Rhett, it goes like this. Keith and Miranda, We Were Us. And right now, we'll play you a clip of this. He's got Maren Morris, Circles Around This Town, which he was a writer on. I drove circles around this town. And also, he's a writer on Kelsey Ballerini and Kenny Chesney, Half of My Hometown. Half of my hometown, still hanging around, still talking about. So I think you'll enjoy this. I mean, he does talk about later when he dropped out of high school. I mean, so young. You'll hear it. It's a great interview. Really enjoyed this. This is Jimmy Robbins here on the Bobbycast. All right, here with Jimmy Robbins, which I guess I'm so inconsiderate as a human that I had said to you recently, we met on my show. I was like, hey, first time to meet you. And you're like, no. We met. I don't even know. Where did we see each other? You were with Kelsey. Is that what you said?
I think so. Well, I feel like we've been in the same place.
Okay.
But haven't, like, we don't hang out on the weekends every weekend.
Yeah, I mean, I don't hang out with anybody. That being said, I felt like when you came on the radio show and Mike and I were talking, and that was a Marin-centric thing, but I was like, dang, I really like Jimmy. Yeah. Like, and you've accomplished so much, and you're, I mean, what are you, like, 15?
Yeah.
17, something yes. like that? You've accomplished so much in that time.
We should fact check that.
That I was... I thought, hey, we should have him on for a little bit. So I appreciate you coming over and coming over to the house and saying what's up. Even though you do live super close, and I heard it was very easy, so we like for it to be a little more of a struggle.
Well, I scootered over here, which was good.
Fair, and it is rush hour, so if you scooted in rush hour, we are good. I have to think, and I'll compare it to a story of mine first to give you a bit of time to think about the answer to this, that it's tough being a very successful, especially in the past 5 years, 6 years, songwriter, maybe even more than that. But we'll say for the sake of it, 5 years, you've been crushing it. Songwriter in town because everybody wants to hang out with you so they can work with you. Now, I'm going to let you think about that answer for a second because in a way I understand that because I'm not cool. I'm no barrel of monkeys to hang out with, but people are always like, hey, man, we should hang out. We should have dinner. And I always know there's a motivation. Not always. Most times I assume there's a motivation behind it that, no, you want to hang out for something that will help your career. Mm-hmm. You want to go to dinner, so I'll put you on the radio show. I'll take you to open for me, you know, when I'm playing theaters, something. So I have this trust issue with anyone in the creative space in this town. Now, you are killing it so much as a songwriter. It's almost like you spin gold, and you don't have to play humble, but you've just done so much. Do you have that fear with people when they someone out of the blue is like, hey, man, we should really get a beer or hang out?
I think there's a thing there where you can feel when people have an ulterior motive. But a lot of the people I spend time with, we were friends before any of us had success.
Which is very safe.
Yeah.
Right?
And you wind up having success together. Most of the, like, I came up writing with all the people that I write with now, and none of us had hits, so we wrote together because the hit people wouldn't write with us. And that's still a bulk of the people I spend time with are those same folks.
Who are those people that you would consider your group that you cut your teeth together here in this town with?
I mean, the first two names that come to town are John Knight and Nicole Galleon.
Massive. Both massive now.
Yeah. They've done so well, and none of us had a cut together. And I didn't have a publishing deal. I don't know why they wrote songs with me. But I've told Nicole before that I feel like she taught me how to write songs. And her version of that is she said she feels like I'm the first person that let her be herself in the writing room. And we sort of stumbled into writing songs together. And then John, he's the other guy that taught me everything. The first song we ever wrote together was Whatever She's Got for David Nail.
And Whatever She's Got.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I didn't
sing that again. Sing that song.
You sing that song.
No, because I'm getting too confused because I know
it's the
song.
It's the mood ring. Like, she's got the blue jeans painted on tight.
She got the blue jeans painted. Yeah. That's it.
You did the high version, which is better.
That's what when I'm recording, I tend to go up there and they got to. No. Okay, got it. So
yeah.
You and Nicole wrote that?
Well, me and John wrote that.
Okay, got it.
Yeah, the first time we ever met. But yeah, all those guys, I mean, Josh Osborne. I was writing with him the day Come Over went number one, and that was his first ever number one song. He's had 9,643 since then. But it's, you know, those are all still my people.
If you get the text, hey, Jimmy, let's get a beer, and you're like, I met you twice. Do you? And you are a pleasant guy to be around, and most likely they just want to hang out with you because they like you. Do you have that feeling that I have where I'm so insecure with myself as a person, I just assume they're wanting to work with me or... Or are you just good and all healthy and therapied up?
I mean, I'm not good, nor am I healthy. But I think I have some of that. But a big thing that changed for me was we had kids. And so now my resting answer is no. Mm. I don't see anybody because we're so busy with writing and stuff that it takes a lot for me to say yes. So generally, I see the people that I've been friends with forever. There's not a lot of like, I don't know you, let's hang out. Because it's more like I'm going to go see a kid.
Sometimes I'll get those. There are a couple artists that have hit me up and been like, hey man, let's get a beer. We haven't had a beer in forever. And I don't respond, but I'm like, I've never had a beer in my life. Yeah, in forever, literally forever, because I don't drink. And I know you just sent me this to be like, so I don't.
No, literally forever.
Yeah, literally. I want to kind of bounce in and out of your success as a songwriter here in town with kind of your human story. And I want to go back to 2000.
Well, how do you know that I'm human?
I don't. We're going to find out.
Okay.
You have kids.
I didn't say human kids.
God dang, you got me again. Yeah. This guy. Blake Shelton. Sure be cool if you did. 2013. You don't have to throw back your pretty pink lemonade shooter and lean a little closer. That's your first number one?
Yes.
True or false?
True. That was my first cut.
Are you kidding? That was your first cut, and did you know how long until you knew it was going to be a cut, and then how long until you knew that cut was going to be a single?
Well, this is like an unfair story, because we wrote it. This is not the normal story is I wrote a song 25 years ago, and it just came out. Mm-hmm. But this one, we wrote it on a like Thursday, and it got cut the following Tuesday.
Oh, it literally was cut like mm-hmm. 5 days later?
Yeah. Yeah, because I wrote it with Rodney Clausen and Chris Tompkins, who I had no business writing with, and they just had such a rapport. They sent it straight to Scott Hendricks because they knew Blake was going in to cut, and they cut it. And then that was in, like, November, and then he took it to radio after New Year's, like January 3rd.
Yeah, that's a wild story. Yeah, and I have a friend who played professional baseball, and I want to relate it to you and see if you feel the same way. But he... was a really good college player. Are you a sports guy at all?
Yeah, let's say I am.
Okay.
Let's go with that.
The story's not that. I just wondered for my own personal sake. He was a really good college baseball player. He gets called up to the pros. He plays minor league ball. Gets taken to the major leagues in like his first 2 months. And his first game in the majors, he goes 3-for-4. Gets up four times. Hits when he goes 3 for 4, it's like, oh my God, this is the easiest thing ever. Who knew that being in the major leagues was so easy? For like the next 3 weeks, he barely got a hit. But mm-hmm. that first day up, he was like, I just crushed. I'm the greatest baseball player ever. Did you feel that a little bit? Like, this is pretty easy. Who knew?
Yeah.
I would have.
Yeah. No, the me that I am right now versus the me in 2015 is very different. Because I had like 5 number ones in 16 months or something.
Golly.
And the best thing that ever happened to me was a bad year. A year where stuff didn't get cut. And then the things that were singles didn't work. And I had to ride that and come out on the other side of it and remember that, like, my favorite part of this is when the song's finished, and writing songs is what I love. And I tell people all the time, you need a bad year. It's, and then stay in it, and it's good for you. But I was definitely too big for my britches.
Well, me too. I relate to that. I got, and I've had a pretty weird, wild career of kind of coming from little to here now. But when I got here, it was like, okay, you've now been anointed. Like, you built this, but you're the guy.
Yeah.
And everybody was like, look at all you're doing. And I'm like, wow, I'm the emperor has no clothes. Like, this is the great. And it took some, I got fined $1 million. I got into some trouble on the air. And I was like, oh, okay. Now I'm good with perspective.
Yeah.
First, I was just good and kind of cocky. But now I'm good with perspective because I had the good. I thought that's what it was. And then once I realized, I needed some crap to make me a human again.
Yeah.
It sounds like that's a bit what happened to you too.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it makes you better at what you're doing if you can take those hits and then keep doing it. You're going to wind up better on the other side of it.
Well, let's talk about the good old days. Back in 2013, here is Thomas Reddick, Goes Like This, your second number one. It goes like, ooh, what I wouldn't do. This is TR's first number one, I believe, right?
Yeah.
So now you've written Thomas Rhett's first number one song. He's forever attached to you.
Yeah.
Because his first number one was the Jimmy song.
Yeah.
So you can call him at any time, be like, dude, I need $10,000. Remember that first number one?
Well, I could probably leave a voicemail at any time.
Ah, that's true. And so you wrote that with Rhett, his dad. Was that the connection that got it to TR?
Yeah. Yeah. At the time, Thomas, you know, he had had songs out, but he wasn't a name you thought of necessarily. And I remember being confused when Rhett was like, I'm going to send this to my son. I was like, cool, man. I'll send it to my dad, too. Like, that's great. Let's do that. But it was the perfect storm of, like, the sound Thomas wanted to do. Because there were a couple of quirks with that demo that stuck onto the record that people weren't really doing. Like, some of those drum sounds were a little left of center at the time. And it sort of opened the floodgates a little bit for that stuff.
And it's funny how left of center that becomes a hit is now common. Yeah, it's now center, yeah. I want to do one more up in this early section. This is Keith and Miranda, We Were Us, also from 2013. Back when that song was a song I could sing along without thinking about you every time I came home. Every beat, every line, every word, every time when the road was a road I could run through. Now, I put those three together to start this because that was a CMA triple play.
Yeah.
You had three. Explain what a CMA triple play is.
That's when you have three number one songs in 12 calendar months.
Crazy.
And a lot has to go right for that, just with timing and everything.
It should be like a CMA triple play deluxe because you did it in your first year as well.
Yeah. Yeah, my first year of a pub deal too.
The guys that signed, were you signed to this guy had a lot of potential. Let's pay him some big bucks to be on the pub deal. Or were you like, oh, this guy, we're going to give this guy, break him off a little something and let him prove it?
Man, they paid me so much. $23,000.
That's what I thought.
A year.
You really? And how long was that deal for you?
3 years.
Boy, I bet you just.
But, you know, I was actually signed to Keith Urban.
What a loser, huh?
He's the worst.
He's the worst. Okay, so that being said, we're going to come back to your songs. I want to play from 2006. This is Seven Letters.
Oh, God. That's what I'm feeling now. Amazing. Only for the best, only for the best. Looking out for you, looking out for you. Trying hard to make this easier. Only for the best, only for the best. It's a lot for everybody.
Seven Letters, 2006. That is you singing.
It's me singing. There's a story there, too, that would blow your mind.
I'm ready. I'm ready to be blunt. Well,
I was.
I'm ready to have mom.
Yeah. You ready to be? Okay.
Yeah.
I was 15 when I did that song, and I met a guy on MySpace named Jordan Schmidt, who was 16, and I flew to Minnesota to make an EP with him, and we made this EP that wound up being the thing that got me a record deal. But now Jordan is in Nashville writing hit songs, and we wrote his first hit song together called Lights Come On, and that was like 10 years after we had met in Minnesota.
Wow. That EP, Too Sorry for Apologies?
Yes.
Oh, one of my favorites.
Yeah, I know. You play that one a lot.
I mean, I was at every show.
Yeah, I remember that.
And so...
You were the one.
Before... Yeah, but you just said it. You got a record deal.
Yeah. Yeah, I toured a lot.
Warped Tour?
Yeah. I did all that stuff and lived in a van and did that kind of touring, the kind where you're gone for like 4 months at a time.
And so when you were a kid, you mentioned being 15, 16. When you were 12... What artists did you, the artist, want to be like? Who did you see and go, man, that's what I want to do?
I really was huge on the sort of emo, I know it's kind of a dirty word these days, but the emo music like Dashboard Confessional and Something Corporate and that whole world, Jimmy Eat World. They had a great name, Jimmy, but those were like my favorite bands. And I've actually gotten to write with those guys now in this new life, which has been pretty cool. I became buddies with Andrew, the singer for Something Corporate, and it's wild to circle back to all that now from a bird's eye view.
One more song. This is Hey You.
Oh, God.
Wait, what? Why? This is great stuff here, and it also gives context.
Yeah, no, it's great. Let's listen to
this.
This
is Hey You, and here's the song in its entirety. Here you go.
Oh, hey You. Yeah, you playing with my hope through truth. You always know just what to say. Maybe it's better off this way. Maybe with you.
So what happened to the artist career?
Honestly, getting a record deal introduced me to songwriting. And I never wanted to be an artist is what I figured out. I just loved writing songs.
Why? You mean ever? You just thought you wanted to be an artist?
Yeah, because I liked writing songs and I didn't know what else to do with them. And the bands that I grew up listening to, if you looked at the liner notes, they all wrote their own songs. And so when I signed to Universal Motown, they started setting me up on sessions, and I had never co-written a song before. And so I wound up asking out of my record deal to try to be a songwriter and quit doing the artist thing as soon as I realized I could try to write for people.
But before you quit, and this song I have a lot. I'm just going to do one more.
Yeah, no, it feels right to me.
Thank you. It feels right to me, too. Whenever I see someone, like, grimacing in pain, I know I've hit the right spot.
Yep.
This is from 2009. This is going to get better.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I saw you go, okay, I like this one a little better. You like this one better?
No.
You don't? Okay. Here you go.
It's going to get better when you go. Going to get better on my own. I got to give you all, got to give you out of my head.
Elevated production?
Yes.
A couple other instruments?
Yes.
That's my opinion, that's the best one.
Yeah.
My favorite.
Well, I do think listening to that, like, you can hear, obviously I don't do the same thing anymore, but there's, that sounds like the same guy that would have written Whatever She's Got to me. Like, I didn't move to Nashville and start doing something different. I just kind of wound up here at a time when my natural instincts were where country music was going.
Same. I didn't move here and do a thing different. And we were doing pop and hip-hop, and I was doing a syndicated show there, and nothing changed. What was weird for me, and I think you've experienced this too, or probably from like a fringe, because I have. When I was doing, and probably not this specifically, but when I was doing pop, I was too country to do pop. And then when I came to country, I was too pop to do country. And I was like, well, I don't really have a place, so I'm just going to be me.
Yeah.
And turns out that was the strongest thing I could ever do.
Yeah.
And who I am, just... somebody that grew up in a tiny town in Arkansas that was heavily influenced by country music in the 90s, alternative music in the 90s, hip-hop in the 90s. And that ended up being what has now, hopefully, bonded me to a lot of my listeners. Mm-hmm. Like an honest person who really doesn't fit anywhere, but heck, none of us do. None of us actually fit anywhere. When we fit somewhere, it's because we force ourselves to fit somewhere.
Yeah.
And you coming from this background, and you said it better than I could have said it, you were just here at the time when you... organically made sense.
Yeah.
Did you get from any of the old school guys, oh, here's the punk guy, or whatever, I don't know what they would call you, here's the emo guy.
I had a big producer say to my face, because I early on I would get hired onto sessions as a guitar player if they were cutting a song I had written, just because the way I played was sort of specific and not good, but stylistic. And he said to my face, "You're ruining country music. Okay, go." Like that was a real moment.
And do you remember that person? You know, I'm not telling you to say who it is.
Yeah.
But are they still here?
They still live here.
Yeah. I've had those moments too.
Yeah.
Where it's, hey, you're what's wrong with.
Yeah. And those are the people that don't, you got to adapt and and welcome new things.
And you need, and adapt and welcome new things that even don't work, because sometimes you need them not to work to show that's not the direction it's going.
Yeah.
And so you move to town. 2013, you're just crushing it. You're king of the world. You're king dingling of the new writers. I'm imagining everybody's like, I got to ride with. Did you feel people like, I don't want to say begging, but were people showing up to go, I need to write with you? You've done so much so quick. You got to be like the new methodology of country music, like thinking wise.
Yeah. I mean, I do think people wanted to write with me. I was one of only a handful of guys doing something that's really common now, which is like the quote unquote track guy thing, which is a producer writer who's building a demo as they go. And people weren't quite used to that here. The funny thing is, I didn't come here to do that. I just came here broke and couldn't afford to do demos. So I bought the Pro Tools starter kit and like pretended that I knew what I was doing. And I had no idea.
Is that still a thing that's used against people? One of my friends, Ross Copperman.
Yeah.
Same, like, oh, he's the track guy.
Yeah.
But then once either you hit a level of success or enough track guys, I'm just saying that because it's the term you threw out there, and that was the term that was used.
Yeah.
Enough track guys have proved you're not just a track guy, you're actually a writer, producer. He's a track guy. Is that still said, or is that kind of gone at this point?
Well, I think it's become a sliding scale. And there's writer producers and there's producer writers. And so I think people now know who the guys are that are making really good demos, and they know the guys that are helping you write a song and then have the ability to demo it. And so I would like to think I fall into that, like Ross falls into that. He's a songwriter who's good at production. You know?
So the track guy term, is it used as much? Just thrown out like, if you're going to write. From what I know, it's going to be like, well, he's a track guy, so let's make sure to not get another track guy in the room.
Yeah, I mean, they say it.
Yeah?
Yeah. It's not as much of a dirt. It was like kind of a negative.
Yeah, and that's the point. That's the point I was making. That yes. It was. Has some of that negativity gone from the term track guy?
Yeah. Yeah, it's, and I don't know why, because they still kind of mean it in a negative way.
This festival and concert season will be all about the boots. And Tecovas is your next stop before attending your next concert. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring. You're talking about men's boots, women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition, timeless style, always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort, little to no break-in period. Like, it's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Plus, direct-to-consumer pricing keeps the value on your feet, the money in your pocket. So stop by your local Tecovas store. Have a complimentary drink. Shop the new styles. You like the smell of leather or no?
I love it.
Yeah. That's what the whole store basically is. Fresh leather.
Yep.
Friendly staff. Or like the smell of staff?
I don't know. I guess I'm sure they smell good there.
Many stores have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. What a gift, too. Regular live music and events. There is no in-store experience like this. If you can't make it to a store, just visit tecovas.com. TECOVAS.com.
TECOVAS.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tecovas.com. Find your new favorite pair of boots today. Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson. How do the biggest names in outlaw country start a musical revolution? Through one woman's vision from one tiny living room. Don't miss Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the outlaw country music movement and its biggest stars. Brewer shaped the sound and soul of country music as we know it today, despite never picking up an instrument herself. Lovingly dubbed as the Boar's Nest, Sue's place was an intimate staging ground where a new breed of singer-songwriters, wounded souls, wayward upstarts, That's where they would spur each other and tap into something bigger and something realer. Starring Mandy Moore and featuring Eben Moss Bachrach as Shel Silverstein and TJ Osborne as Johnny Cash, alongside a full ensemble cast. Audible invites you to enter the boar's nest and experience the rise of a musical revolution. One woman, one time, one place. The Boar's Nest. Sue Brewer and the birth of outlaw country music. Listen now at audible.com/theboar's nest. Hey, it's Bobby Bones. I just want to say thanks to everybody who has stepped up for the kids at St. Jude. St. Jude's been leading the way in the world's best survival rates for some of the most aggressive forms of childhood cancer. Your support means that families never get a bill from St. Jude for treatment or travel or housing or food, so the families can focus on helping their child live. And that really hits home for me because I've been to St. Jude many times. I've hung out with the kids, played music for the kids. I was in the hospital a lot as a kid. Now, I didn't have cancer, but if it wasn't for people stepping up, I don't know that I would have been able to go and stay in the hospital and be taken care of. So that's why we do this, take care of others. You can help St. Jude stop childhood cancer by becoming a partner in hope. When you do this, you'll get this awesome new This Shirt Saves Lives shirt. So join all the doctors and researchers, you know, and me in this fight, and just text the word Bobby to 785-833. It's only six numbers, but text the word Bobby to 785-833. Here's David Nail, Whatever She's Got, from 2014. She got the blue jeans painted on tight. Everybody wants on a Saturday night. She got the mood ring. She never sang the sun 1 minute. And here is Jake Owen Beechin from the same year. It's got to be cool with a song like Jake's that kind of was his image. Did you write it for him, or did he find it and go, this is what I am? Like, how did that come about? Because he... That Jake's Beechin.
Yeah.
That's what that song is.
Yeah, it's like the perfect song
for
that. We weren't really shooting for him, but there's, I think you would know this, there's kind of moments in time where writers and artists connect to each other a lot. And in that season, and still it's true now, but specifically then, Jaren Johnston was like a kindred spirit to Jake. Like, I think Jake thought Jaren was cool and really loved what he was doing. And so that I wrote that song with Jaren and John Knight, and it was really just kind of us singing stuff, and Jaren made it sound like he would do it, and I think that's why it spoke to Jake. And
did then, you guys, when you wrote it, did you think Jaren would cut it with Cadillac 3?
No.
Okay.
I don't think we thought of Jake for it.
Which is wild, because when I think of Jake, that's one of the first songs I think of now.
Yeah.
And Jake's a close friend, and that's still the image.
Yeah.
Like, when it's like, what do you picture Jake singing if he's on stage doing one? It's probably Beechin.
Yeah.
I think most people would think Jake wrote that song because it's so Jake.
Yeah.
Do you have any of those other songs that you look at and go, man, it just fell in the right hands because it's the song for the right person at the exact right time? Because I feel that way about Beechin.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of feel that way about all of them.
What a cop-out answer.
Is that?
Yeah, a little bit.
Well, because I feel like...
A little bit.
I feel like, with the exception of, like, song of the year songs, that a lot of songs could be hits and couldn't be. And it's just got to be the right person connecting with the message and it feeling sincere. Like, I don't think the song does everything. I think the right artist has to do it.
It's funny because you're coming at it from the songwriter perspective, and I feel the same way from, and I'm not in the mix anymore in the radio world of, I don't pick songs. I just go on the air, try to be compelling, try to be funny. Bring on my friends, interview them, get good ratings, go away, right? That's kind of, back in the day, I was more like, let's break artists and do, and now I'll let the music people do the music things, and I'll, so I can step away and see it. And I feel the same way you say, well, any song could, I feel like you could almost make any song a hit.
Yeah.
If the right team, the right label gets behind it, puts enough effort into it and spends money and promotes it, I feel like they can make almost any song a hit.
Yeah.
The same way that you're saying a well-written, almost any well-written song, with the right person singing at the right time, could be a hit.
Yeah. And I mean, I do feel like, this is a gross word, but I'll say it anyway. There's like hits and then there's like a smash.
Okay.
And I don't think any song can do that.
I will agree with that too.
That perfect storm of like, this is a moment.
But that's a great comparison. A moment is a great comparison. A moment, I drive your truck.
Sure.
A moment, house that built me.
Mm-hmm.
A moment, American kids, right? Yeah. I'm going through songs that, yeah. that when I just think that, but I think with the right person and support, you can make any hit a legitimate radio hit.
Yeah.
The same way you think from the writer's side that any hit could make it with the right person singing it.
Yeah. Especially you do this long enough and you see it's, you know, not always the best song is on the radio and sometimes the
it
best songs don't wind up on the radio.
Yeah, it's kind of bullcrap, if you ask me. I think the same thing.
Let's just list all the songs we hate. You ready? Let's go.
Oh, we'd be here all day. This would be a whole different podcast. And I've done that in different places, and it usually gets me in that trouble I was talking about earlier yeah. in this podcast. Aldean 2016, Lights Come On.
When the lights come on, everybody's screaming, lighters in the sky, and everybody's singing every word to every song.
Now, before we get into the song specifically, you had a two-year gap. I don't see any number ones.
Yeah. That was my lull. Oof. That was my lull. And I was getting cuts, but I had gotten really accustomed to the feeling of everything working out and saying yes, or not saying yes, being told yes. And I mean, I got really low about that.
I was going to ask, in a serious way, did you start to feel like maybe you lost whatever you came to town with?
Yeah. It's hard to not take it personally. I mean, because you can't really blame anybody but yourself because you're making this thing that didn't exist. Nobody's doing it for you. So I definitely took it personally and got really down and then sort of started feeling like it would never happen again and then sort of fell back in love with just writing songs.
Which got you the success to begin with.
Yeah.
Right? You kind of went full
circle. We weren't
circle.
Trying to write hits. Mm-hmm. All the first hits I had were just writing songs with my friends. And that's totally right. That's the whole thing, is just write songs. And then the hits happen.
Were you, and again, I think we're alike in a lot of ways except for your superior talent and looks. But other than that, but were you embarrassed that the success wasn't coming? Because you had already been elevated to that point, and people were like, hey, you got any songs out now? How are they doing? Did that happen to you at all?
Yes.
Because I feel that way at times.
Yes.
Okay.
And I really felt that way. And then I learned a lot, because of my wife, who's a publisher, started pointing out to me that we're all so busy thinking about other people, thinking about us, that nobody's thinking about anybody else. And I started realizing we started doing other things in that lull. We started our own company and started trying to support other people. And all of a sudden, I realized people were congratulating me all the time. And in my head, I was like, don't they know I don't have a song on the radio? I don't know what's happening. And then I kind of realized, like, no, nobody's looking at me the way I'm looking at me. And I really got to a much healthier place with all of it, where I don't feel so attached to the success portion.
I mean, you're so right. I compare it to, on a different level, a presentation at work. Or somebody falling down somewhere, and they're so embarrassed because they either fell or they didn't do a good presentation, and they're like, you're humiliated because you didn't do a good job, and everybody saw you not do the good job, and you're thinking, oh, but the times I've seen a bad presentation or some, I don't remember it.
Yeah.
10 minutes later.
Yeah.
But when it's you, you feel like everybody is focused in remembering on what happened to me. I did it.
Yeah.
But nobody is. And you have to kind of turn it around and go, well, I don't remember when people screw up. I may see it for a second and be like, ha-ha, or that's unfortunate. But I don't, a day later, even remember it.
Yeah.
And it seems a bit like that's what you're saying there. Like there was just an adjustment, a perspective adjustment.
Yeah. Yeah, and just looking at everybody else and remembering, like, am I thinking about what songs they have on the radio, or am I just thinking that they're really good?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, yeah, no, I just think they're good.
Back to Aldi and Lights Come On. This is interesting for a couple of reasons. I'm going to say three reasons. The three reasons are, one, it was written by 74 people.
Well, it's 73.
Okay. But really the best is that you mentioned Jordan earlier.
Yes.
You guys wrote this song together.
Yeah.
And it met when you were 15 and 16 years old. And here you are in 2016 writing an Aldean number one.
Yeah.
The other one is that the FGL guys, this was always a story about this song, is that the FGL guys were on it as writers and they didn't cut it, but Aldean cut it.
Yeah.
So you wrote it with, I don't know if you're in the same room.
We were all in the same room, but it was a double booking.
Oh.
We were not all supposed to be there. And
got
I
it.
Was going to not show up. And Tyler was texting me and I was like, y'all just do it. I'm not, it's fine. Don't worry about it. And he was like, well, I'm going to tell the Warren brothers you hate them. I was like, okay, I'm going to come.
It's like in wrestling, sometimes they'll have tag team matches with three different tag teams. It's rare.
Yeah.
But here are the three tag teams. You and Jordan, friends since kids.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Warren brothers. written a ton of songs. They don't write with anybody else but themselves. You know, mm-hmm. if they're going to write, they're writing together with other people. They're literal brothers. And then Tyler and Brian from FGL. It was like three tag teams, and they're writing the song.
Yeah.
And it can go one of two ways.
Yeah, it can definitely go one of two ways.
Amazing, because there's so much in that room, talent, songwriting. Or there's just too much in the room, and you can't really control it.
And everybody's talking over each other, and you don't get anything.
How did what was the vibe on this write?
Dude, this was like the second or third song. We wrote three songs that day.
God dang. Yeah. You wrote three songs in a day?
Yeah, I think it was the Warren Brothers were like, well, there's so many of us. We should probably write a lot of songs to justify our little splits. But it was – that one felt awesome as soon as we got into it, and the Warren Brothers came in with the vibe. But then we got the Kiss of Death, which was when Brian said, man, this would be great for Aldean. And you never want to be writing with an artist and they tell you this is great for another artist.
So you were writing in that room in your mind for FGL?
Yeah, they specifically needed a show opener.
Got it.
And that was they wanted a show opener for the record, and they were gearing up for tours. That was, we were there with a job.
So you're writing for them with them, and BK goes, man, this would sound great for Aldean.
Yeah.
That's funny and for a second tragic.
Yes. In your head, you're like, oh, cool, we should stop.
Because you obviously don't want it.
Yeah, and it's, with the exception of those guys, it's tough to get an artist cut with another artist. And that hasn't been true for them at all, and obviously not true for that song. But yeah, for a second, I was like, cool, I'll just, should I just jump off this porch?
Michael Ray, Think a Little Less from 2017. Here you go.
Kiss a little more, think a little less. Burning up the night like a cigarette. Get you out.
Another first for an artist. Although she had massive success, this was Maren's first number one, I Could Use a Love Song, in 2018.
I could use a love song.
So, when you and Maren first wrote together, was it for this song, or did you write together for other songs?
We had written a handful of times before then, but this was the first time she and I and Laura wrote, which has kind of since become a thing. We've written a lot of songs, the three of us. And at the time, my wife was Maren's publisher at Big Yellow Dog. So there's a lot I love about this song, but it was the first thing my wife had set up that I was a part of that went on to do something, and that has always made it special for me.
Would you be considered in the Maren camp?
I think so.
Any other camps that you would, because I would consider you in the Maren camp.
Yeah.
But I wonder, what other camps do you consider yourself part of, if any, where they're going to write, you know you're going to write with them for a new record?
Yeah. I feel like I write a lot with Brett Young. And I read a lot with Kelsey Ballerini. But it doesn't guarantee cuts or anything, but I know I'll at least get to write some songs.
And you know they feel comfortable enough with you that when they start to position themselves and creatively look at the future, they're like, oh, I got to get Jimmy because he's part of the process. Do you feel like that with all three of them?
Yeah. I think for artists, they get so busy that they want to know if they're going to put time into a song that they can – they want to – raise their odds of getting something that they feel good about. And when you have a rapport with somebody, it's just, you're not starting from zero. You know, we can walk in and we know each other's likes and dislikes, and it just makes it a lot easier.
How far do you book out?
I used to book out like 3 months, and we now try to just book out like a month or 6 weeks to leave a little more flexibility, because we found I was having to miss a lot of opportunities because we were too rigid with it. And I think it's been better. And I don't have to look at the calendar and think, well, that's 95 things that mm-hmm. I've not written yet. And I don't have any ideas today.
Are you keeping a list of ideas in your phone? And then are you ranking them based on the artist that you're going in with?
I'm not a big title guy. Like, some people have 150 titles in their phone all the time. I'll get some sometimes, but I feel like my role in the room more often is I'm pretty good at helping people figure out the best way to do a title. So somebody will have an idea, and I might come up with three different ways we could write it pretty fast. Like, that's how my brain connects the dots.
And that's the best role, if your role is to go in and figure out what they want by them telling you what they want, because there ain't nothing to do before you go in except just be you.
Yeah, there's less pressure that way.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. And I used to do a lot of musical preparation. So since I was the track guy in the room, I would try to have like four what I called vibes, which would be of varying tempos and just like eight bars of music. And I kind of stopped doing that too, because that I feel like music has gotten a bit more musical again. And when you have that, you get really boxed into writing over the same chords the whole time. And I just feel like we're allowed to play more chords than we were for a minute. And so we're going from scratch a lot more.
Here's Marin, The Bones.
When the bones are good, the rest don't matter. Yeah, the pain could peel, the glass could shatter. Let it rain.
This was a moment.
Yeah.
This was a moment.
Yeah.
You have a lot of hits. You have defining songs with some artists. There are so few moments. I would say this is a moment. Yeah. Would you agree?
Yeah, this one felt different.
Did it feel different immediately? Or did it feel different once people started going, wow, we need to really get on this and promote the crap out of it?
I don't think I knew that it was going to do what it was going to do. And I think some of that's that it's, I think, a great song, but also I think it was timing where the world wanted to hear that message during that year. You know, they wanted to hear some positivity, and it was sort of a perfect storm of all of that. But no, I mean, the demo of this song is a guitar vocal, which we did that on purpose. We thought it was cool. But I mean, it was my wife's favorite song, but I just thought it was good. I didn't know that it was going to be huge.
This is your 10th number one, but it is a pop number one. It was This City, a song that I've sang back to you.
Yeah.
Because it is. I have a lovely voice, if you haven't heard.
You do.
Yes, thank you. This is Sam Fisher, This City, from 2018.
The city's going to break my heart. The city's going to love me, then leave me alone.
I feel like you could sing that. That's your vibe.
I would like that's a song I would do. I couldn't sing like Sam, but as an artist, that's like the kind of music I would probably make.
I feel that too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like if MySpace existed now, you'd put that on you singing that on MySpace.
I think it does exist.
Does it?
It does.
It exists, but does it?
Well, I check it every day, my MySpace.
Nice.
Yeah, Tom.
Tom Reed. Tom reaching out?
He's not, no.
Just you two? Yeah. You're the only two talking on
me
there?
Me and Tom.
This festival and concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your next stop before attending your next concert. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring. You're talking about men's boots, women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition, timeless style, always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort, little to no break-in period. Like, it's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Plus, direct consumer pricing keeps the value on your feet, the money in your pocket. So stop by your local Tecovas store. Have a complimentary drink. Shop the new styles. You like the smell of leather or no?
I love it.
Yeah. That's what the whole store basically is. Fresh leather.
Yep.
Friendly staff. Or like the smell of staff?
I don't know. I guess I'm sure they smell good there.
Many stores have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. What a gift, too. Regular live music and events, there is no in-store experience like this. If you can't make it to a store, just visit tecovas.com.
Tecovas.com.
Tecovas. Yeah.
Yeah.
Tecovas.com. Find your new favorite pair of boots today. Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson. How did the biggest names in outlaw country start a musical revolution? Through one woman's vision from one tiny living room. Don't miss Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the outlaw country music movement and its biggest stars. Brewer shaped the sound and soul of country music as we know it today, despite never picking up an instrument herself. Lovingly dubbed as The Boar's Nest, Sue's place was an intimate staging ground where a new breed of singer-songwriters, wounded souls, wayward upstarts. That's where they would spur each other and tap into something bigger and something realer. Starring Mandy Moore and featuring Eben Moss Backrack as Shel Silverstein and TJ Osborne as Johnny Cash alongside a full ensemble cast. Audible invites you to enter the Boar's Nest and experience the rise of a musical revolution. One woman, one time, one place. The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Listen now at audible.com/theboarsnest. Hey, it's Bobby Bones. I just want to say thanks to everybody who has stepped up for the kids at St. Jude. St. Jude's been leading the way in the world's best survival rates for some of the most aggressive forms of childhood cancer. Your support means that families never get a bill from St. Jude for treatment or travel or housing or food, so the families can focus on helping their child live. And that really hits home for me because I've been to St. Jude many times. I've hung out with the kids, played music for the kids. I was in the hospital a lot as a kid. Now, I didn't have cancer, but if it wasn't for people stepping up, I don't know that I would have been able to go and stay in the hospital and be taken care of. So that's why we do this, to take care of others. You can help St. Jude stop childhood cancer by becoming a partner in Hope. When you do this, you'll get this awesome new This Shirt Saves Lives shirt. So join all the doctors and researchers, you know, and me in this fight, and just text the word Bobby to 785-833. It's only six numbers, but text the word Bobby to 785-833. Let's see. I do want to play Circles Around This Town. This is on Marin's new record, Humble Quest. I drove circles around this town, trying to ride circles around this town, trying to say something with me, something worth singing about. I've been counting up in ruthless. And that, you guys came into the show and played that. When Marin said, hey, will you come play with me? How did that conversation go? When she's like, hey, will you go to the show with me?
Yeah, she just asked me like the night before. I guess her guitar player and backup guitar player had COVID, and she just texted me because we're really good buddies. Like we our kids are friends and friendly, and we get dinner with them a lot. So I was like, yeah, I'll play it. It's only three chords.
Do you get jealous that Ryan is tall and ripped and has like the perfect stubble? Not that you have pretty.
I know.
Yourself,
I really do.
Like,
I really do.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't feel like he tries very hard.
I don't either. That's what sucks. He for sure doesn't try his height.
He's not taking growth hormones for that. But no, I remember he actually stayed with me for a few months back in the day. We've been buddies for a long time. And I remember he was like, I think I'm going to start doing push-ups. And then like 4 days later, he had a six-pack.
Maybe that's what I need to do, Mike.
Push-ups.
I was like, what have you been doing? He's like, yeah, just doing like 30 push-ups in the morning. I'm like, okay.
When you left the show, you said you were going to go do a vocal with Brett Young. How'd that go?
It was great.
Yeah? Can he still sing?
Yeah, he can still sing.
Nice.
So that's good.
So it was a song.
Also tall and good looking.
Yeah, I know. I don't even like talking about him, though. He's also two. I can't talk about more than one, or I start to get really jealous. And he was like a superior athlete.
Yeah, he's good at everything.
Like, shut up, Brett Young. We get it.
I also don't think he tries that hard to be awesome at everything.
Shut up, Brett Young. Yeah. You get it. Did you guys write that song that you cut the vocals on like way before? Or was it one you'd just written like the night a couple days before?
We had just written it. It's actually, it's not out yet. So I don't know if I can say,
Don't say too much. I mean, I'm just asking, like, was it a song you'd written way previous?
No, just a couple days ago. Okay. I think we had written it Sunday. So I think I came in with you.
You wrote on a Sunday?
I did, because he asked me to.
There's a demand over here.
I know.
Weekend writing with stars.
I know.
So you write it, and then you want to lay it down quickly so it's still you could send it to the label or what?
Yeah, this one was an isolated event where we were writing for an opportunity for him, like a placement kind of song for a movie. And so
Top Gun 2?
It's Top Gun 5.
Top Gun. Oh, but that'll never come out too. It's taking 3 years to come out. It's already been done. So you've produced a lot as well, and some of my favorite people. If I'm correct, you can correct me if I'm not correct. Did you produce Maddie and Tay Die from Broken Heart?
Yeah. Me and Derek Wells co-produced it.
Do we have a clip of that, Mike?
How does he
sleep? Come on.
It's him.
I love this song. The production on it is so good. It's just the perfect. For them, this was it.
Yeah.
The writing, the vocal, the production.
Yeah. That's as good as it gets for them to me. Like, that's top level them.
You're saying you made them top level is what I'm hearing.
I'm saying me personally.
Yes.
I'm responsible.
When you go produce, what is that? What is that? Where do you go? Do you have your own place? Do you hire a fancy studio? What's the vibe when you produce a song?
Well, kind of both things. I do have a place. I have a studio in Berry Hill. And it sort of depends on the artist and on the record for how they want to do it. So like Maddie and Tay, we track with a band and it's all live stuff. And then there's other albums like the way Kelsey likes to do a lot of stuff. Historically, it's me playing everything at my place. And that's just more the process she likes. So kind of depends. I can do what people need.
With the Kelsey stuff, because I pulled all the number ones, I know you and Kelsey have had some big singles. What were the Kelsey songs?
Well, I produced
it. Maybe that's what it was.
No, but I did. We had Homecoming Queen that I wrote with her. And then we're at like number two right now with Half of My Hometown.
I told you, that's my favorite song. It has been for a long time. This song is like, I told her and her family listens to the show in Knoxville, and I was talking about it, and she messaged me and was like, I appreciate you. I wouldn't wake up early if I was there. I wouldn't listen to the show either. She was like, I heard from my parents you were talking about the show. I love this song. Yeah. Like, you guys did a great job.
Thank you.
And
there's 19 of us on that one.
Well, I'm jaded. I'm glad. I'm jaded because I hear all songs all the time. Same with you, right?
Yeah.
But occasionally you hear something and you're like, oh, like it's poking an organ.
Yeah.
And this song, maybe because I'm from a small town.
Yeah.
This song did that.
I think you can feel the honest ones. You know what I mean? The ones to me, this song doesn't sound like we were like, let's go check all the boxes and write a hit. I think we just wrote something true to her.
I'm going to put you on the spot in the writing part of it because you mentioned it was written by a lot of people. Do you remember who wrote it?
Yeah. Well, it was me. You mentioned Ross Copperman, Kelsey, Shane McAnally, and Nicole Galleon.
I mean, that's a powerful room.
It's a good room.
If you don't come up with a hit with all those people, somebody must die.
Yeah. That, like, on paper, we should. Mm-hmm. This should happen.
And so do you write that as a duet?
Well, kind of. Well, we wrote it in Florida. We all went down to do a retreat with Kelsey, and it was meant to be her writing with two groups of people, and we were going to split up and kind of change everybody. And we tried it for a minute, and I think it was me who was like, we should probably just all write together. This feels weird. And so we wrote that song in a swimming pool, did the demo at the Airbnb, and then a little bit of Liquid Courage. At like 3 a.m., she sent it to Kenny because we were like, this would be great for Kenny. She was like, I'm going
to
do it.
That's what you do. You get an artist drunk to send them.
Yeah.
For them to send songs to.
You should make big decisions when you're drunk.
Yeah, because other people are like, I don't want to bother them. But if you get them drunk,
they'll do it.
Absolutely. You told me, right? It's your can sound effect in Beechin?
Yeah, yeah.
Like at the beginning of that song? How do you not get an award for that?
Dude, I actually reached out. He was at Sony still at the time on that record. I reached out like 10 times to try to get them to put me in the liner notes for Beer Can. And it never happened.
Like, that's what you played?
Yeah, I wanted
the instrumentation.
It. Give me this
Frank
moment.
On bass, Jimmy on beer can. The lyrics to Beechin are interesting and are sometimes misheard. We had a whole segment on our show about it years ago.
Cocaine.
Because cocaine.
Yeah, my dad thought it was cocaine, too.
Yeah.
He didn't.
And I can hear, and I want to do this trick, because Green Needle, what's the other one people hear? It's two things that, like, you can hear the person go Green Needle or Monster Mash. I don't know. It's like two words, but if you listen, you can hear it different ways. You know what I'm talking about, Mike?
Yeah, I do. One is Laurel and Yanny.
That's another one, right?
Green Needle.
You ever hear of Laurel and Yanny?
Uh-huh.
Are you kidding?
No.
You pull it
out. Oh, we gotta let him see what he hears.
Oh, it's Green Needle and Brainstorm is one.
Okay, when you get those ready, I would like to do them. Are you only writing songs and not watching the internet at all?
Pretty much, yeah.
Have you heard?
I miss everything.
Have you heard of Charlie Bit My Finger?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Good.
Yeah, the British kid.
We'll start there.
Yes.
We'll work our way up. But the lyrics are, and it's sunshine, blue eyes, tan lines. It's low tide, rolling white sand, cold can. Now, if you listen to it, let's do this experiment. Can you do it, Mike? Right now.
Yeah.
And just think to yourself, cold can. Read. Think to yourself, cold can. Okay, that's the actual lyric. Go ahead. Okay. Now, everybody at home, you're probably not at home listening to this, you're probably walking or running or in your car. Think to yourself, cocaine.
Yeah.
Think cocaine. Be cocaine for a second. Play it again, Mike. Cocaine, cocaine. I heard it. It's there. It's there.
My dad swore that's what it was, and he didn't really care for the song. Like, my dad, he's never had alcohol or anything, like, certainly not cocaine. And we had a hard time. Why don't you like this song? It's like pretty simple and good. And he's like, I just don't like that drug stuff. I'm like, what are you talking about?
This is like the cocaine line.
Y'all lost me. You lost me at cocaine.
Mike, you can do that. I'll keep talking. Let me know when you have it.
I have the Brainstorm and Green Needle.
Okay. Jimmy, tell me what you hear here. It's either going to be Brainstorm or Green Needle.
Okay. Oh, wait, should my headphones have been on this whole time?
Yeah.
They haven't been.
Have you been listening to nothing? You have the headphones on.
I could hear it from these headphones over there.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
You haven't heard the clips of your own songs?
Well, I've heard them through those headphones.
Yeah.
Trade with them. Yes, they should have been on. Jimmy's been wearing headphones that don't work.
It's just for looks.
Oh, wow. Oh, God. Okay.
Are they too loud?
No. Well, okay. I hear myself now.
Listen.
I'm going to talk really quiet.
Okay. You're going to hear a toom toom, then you're going to hear it say Green Needle or Brainstorm.
Definitely Green Needle.
Okay. Now, if we think Brainstorm, mm-hmm. now I want you to okay. think Brainstorm on this one, okay?
It's still Green Needle.
I don't think he's all there, Mike. I think he's missing a little something.
It sounds like Brainstorm, man.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like Green Needle first, but then you can hear Brainstorm.
What is the actual thing?
I don't know. I never got that far. I just went, and then turned it off. I don't know. We'll find the other one.
You find out it's like it's saying Hail Satan.
Yeah. Backward, it says kill three people.
Yeah.
If you reverse it. We found, let's see here. Oh, here it is. What's that?
I think this is,
okay.
this is the Laurel.
Is this
Yanny.
Laurel or Yanny? Okay, go ahead.
Laurel.
It's Laurel.
Laurel.
Okay, I'll switch.
Laurel.
I can't. It's
all I hear is Laurel on that one, too. What? Do you hear, anybody hear Yanny?
No.
Is that a joke one where it's only Laurel?
Oh, maybe. Here we go.
Okay, here we go.
Laurel.
All I hear is Yanny.
Laurel.
What?
Are you kidding?
No.
All I hear is Yanny. I don't hear Laurel in any way whatsoever.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Laurel.
I feel like you're messing.
I swear to God, all I hear is Yanny. What do you hear, Reed?
I hear Laurel every time.
I hear Yanny. Yanny. It's Mike, what do you hear?
I hear Laurel in that
one. Wow.
What? Do you really?
Yeah.
I hear Yanny every time.
I sort of feel like there's something wrong with me.
Oh, no. No, I do too, but.
Yeah, for different reasons.
Yeah.
Okay.
But this isn't like a Ouija board where someone's screwing with you and like someone's really controlling it. I hear, you heard Laurel.
Yeah.
I heard Yanny without a doubt. Yanny. I wish there was a way to share that with you, but there is no way.
I know. I was excited for the change. Mm.
Okay. What's the meaning behind your name on Instagram?
The meaning is when I had a record deal, somebody else had Jimmy Robbins, and we tried to get them to give it to us, and they asked for $20,000. And so I just changed the letters of my name.
Yeah.
I thought about flipping it. At the time, it was popular. People were saying, like, Bustin' Jeeber and stuff. And I was like, I'll do that with my name. And when you flip mine, it's not a name you want.
Remy Jabbins? Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, it wasn't.
I wouldn't have gone with that either.
Wasn't the one for me.
It's funny. I couldn't get mine. I told you that. The guy, $20,000, that's a lot.
Yeah, well, and Instagram, this was 10 years ago. Instagram wasn't even, like, popping.
That's a lot.
This festival and concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your next stop before attending your next concert. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring. You're talking about men's boots, women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition, timeless style, always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort, little to no break-in period. Like, it's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Plus, direct consumer pricing keeps the value on your feet, the money in your pocket. So stop by your local Tecovas store. Have a complimentary drink. Shop the new styles. You like the smell of leather or no?
I love it.
Yeah. That's what the whole store basically is. Fresh leather.
Yep.
Friendly staff. Or you like the smell of staff?
I don't know. I'm sure they smell good there.
Many stores have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. What a gift, too. Regular live music and events. There is no in-store experience like this. If you can't make it to a store, just visit tecovas.com.
TECOVAS.com.
TECOVAS. Yeah.
Yeah.
Tecovas.com. Find your new favorite pair of boots today. Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson. How do the biggest names in outlaw country start a musical revolution? Through one woman's vision from one tiny living room. Don't miss Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the outlaw country music movement and its biggest stars. Brewer shaped the sound and soul of country music as we know it today, despite never picking up an instrument herself. Lovingly dubbed as the Boar's Nest, Sue's place was an intimate staging ground where a new breed of singer-songwriters, wounded souls, wayward upstarts. That's where they would spur each other and tap into something bigger and something realer. Starring Mandy Moore and featuring Eben Moss Backrack as Shel Silverstein and TJ Osborne as Johnny Cash alongside a full ensemble cast. Audible invites you to enter the Boar's Nest and experience the rise of a musical revolution. One woman, one time, one place. The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer, and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Listen now at audible.com/theboar'snest.
Does the number 562-606-0903 mean anything to you?
Is that my old phone number?
Yeah.
Is it on MySpace?
Yes. The location is Wesleyan College, North Carolina?
Yeah, basically. Rocky Mount.
How do you say that town?
Wesleyan.
Wesleyan?
Yeah.
And you had 85,000 friends.
Yeah.
You were kind of making it. That's a lot of friends for back in the day on MySpace.
Yeah, that was, I treated it like a job. I was on MySpace. I dropped out of ninth grade and just treated MySpace like a job.
I don't know if you're being serious.
Yeah, I dropped out when I was 14.
You dropped out of high school?
Yeah.
What did your parents say about that?
They weren't thrilled.
How do you have that conversation? That's a really young age to drop out.
It was sort of complicated. My mom had just passed away, and my dad was sort of whatever will make me okay. He was there for that. I don't think it was ideal, but he was great. He let me pursue what I wanted to do.
What do you pursue at 14 or 15?
I'd started doing the MySpace thing, and I turned that into a living.
Wow.
Yeah, I was making a living when I was like 15.
You were an influencer.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not even joking, but I mean, you made your money by social media before that was really a thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I was packaging CDs and shipping them all over the country. Like, I sold thousands and thousands of CDs back then.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is wild. So
it was just unfortunate they sounded like what you played. That was the real downside.
But the third song was really good. That one I might have put on my page.
Yeah, that's the one nobody bought.
How about that? Really?
Yeah. Well, because the album kind of only sort of came out.
Mm. How long did you stay home after you started to go independent making music, 14, 15 years old?
I started touring when I was 14.
Oof.
So I was in a band with some guys that were older than me. They were 18 and 19, and my dad signed a piece of paper giving the singer permission to take me to the hospital if anything happened, and then I was gone.
Did you get any trouble?
I did not. I was raised really like PG, and so there were nights like I chose to sleep in the van because the dudes were like doing some stuff and at a house, and I would just sleep in the van, or we would sleep in parking lots and stuff too. But
wow. You had to grow up pretty quick, huh?
Yeah.
In a few ways.
Yeah.
Yeah, your mom passing that early.
Yeah.
You have to grow up, you know, and then also you decide I'm just going to go hit life at 14, 15 years old. What would you say to that kid now?
I mean, I sort of would do that all the same. I would do all of the same things because I think, even more so now, because I believe now more with perspective that like school wasn't going to get me where I wanted to go. And I mean, I would like for my kids to finish high school just because of the age part of it more than anything. But I would do all the same stuff.
But what if they say, but dad? What if they say Remy Jabbins?
She does call me that.
Yeah. You did.
No, I know. I think about that all the time. I would have a hard time telling her no, but I would hope she was good.
But what were you?
No.
I want to play the two openings to both this city and The Bone. First, The City, Mike.
Yeah, give me one sec.
And I'm going to play The Bones, and it because I'm going to play the guitar licks, right, on both of them.
Yeah.
And if you consider this kind of your trademark as a player-producer, I'm going to let our audience hear it first.
I've been saying lonely people.
Okay, here's the other. What do you think? Like the tone feels pretty similar.
Yeah, it's like the same guy playing guitar.
Do you, is that you?
Yeah, that's the way I play. It's a thing called tenths, which is like a guitar phrasing that I fall into a lot. Just I always like the way it sounds.
Tenths.
Yeah, it's like because the.
Talk to a dumb guy who plays like eight chords.
Well, it's like you're playing the one and then an octave of the fifth, so it's the tenth.
Yeah, stop talking to a dumb guy who plays the gay chords. I need Rosetta Stone for that one. As a songwriter, do you get approached for approval? Like when Maren does The Bones and then Hozier drops on and goes, hey, I want to be, do they come to you?
I think they would only come to us if it was going to affect the copyright. But Hozier didn't ask for a piece of it or anything, at least on the writer side. I'm sure he did on the the master said.
Well, you came in, you killed the interview.
I feel really good.
It's probably going to be a number one.
Yeah, they do that, right? They rank your interviews?
Mm-hmm. Okay. I do anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's probably going to be a number one.
Okay.
For at least today. It's the only one I'm doing today.
Okay, so, good.
I mean, you really can't lose.
Killed it.
So, but I mean, really, congratulations, man. I just always enjoy someone who comes, knows who they are, and stays who they are, even though there's like an outside ring that's like, that's not who we are in this town.
Yeah.
Because once you do you and it proves to be successful, everybody else is like, oh, yeah, we knew that the whole time. Yeah, we'll do that now. I mean, it's crazy. It's crazy to see how, and it's going to happen as you get older. There's going to be somebody else coming that's all different.
Yeah.
And you have to remind yourself, oh, yeah, I was that person. Not the same way, but I was that.
Yeah.
Like, I was different. I was a different splash in the milk here. So, but I like that. I like that about you. I think that it's good to have guys like you in town that are just kind of pushing to make it better and stretch it a little bit. And now you've got wild success and so much money. It's just, you have the fancy watch.
It's so, and I can afford to be your neighbor.
Yeah. I need to see your mortgage paper. big fan, really. Yeah, big fan. I know we haven't spent much time together, but just a big fan of your work and, I mean, the stuff you and Maren do together, just for me, is like next level.
Thank you.
Just, I mean, I feel like when you and Maren started writing songs together, like for me, that was the Maren stuff that hit me the hardest. And so just a great job. And to wrap this up, Reed, I'm going to give you your one question. We let Reed, our camera guy, ask one question. Reed, go ahead.
All right. How often would you say you deal with a writer's block? And if you have any tips to overcome that.
What he whispered to you is, how...
I know, he also made a lot of eye contact. I feel really, really nervous over here. Every day, I feel that way. I think the deal with writer's block, one huge cure in Nashville is collaboration. I'm really lucky that I write with other people. And just showing up. Because there's a lot of days where I don't feel like writing a song. I don't think I have anything to say. And I show up and I talk to my friends and we find something. Like every day we find something. So I think show up and collaborate.
Man. All right. Taking notes now.
Reed, good question.
Thank you, sir.
I think that's it. Well, I feel like I was going to ask you one other thing. I got behind some... I don't believe that people are ever late because of bad traffic. I just don't believe that's really a thing. I think 99 times it's used out of 100, it's a lie. And I was caught up in bad traffic coming home, so I called Mike and I was like, I'm stuck behind... It wasn't bad traffic, an accident.
Oh, yeah.
So traffic, maybe. An accident, no. I mean, let me refresh this.
Yeah.
Most people say, I got behind an accident. They're lying.
Mm-hmm.
I was behind an accident. I thought you were going to beat me here to my own house.
Well, I got here yesterday.
Hmm.
You don't go into that one bedroom very often.
I don't. Yeah. Well, I don't actually live here. I live over there, but still. And so I thought that you were going to beat me here, and you're this big famous songwriter, and you know you probably did. You write before you got here?
I did. I wrote two songs today.
So this is you mentally exhausted?
Kind of. I'm just always mentally exhausted.
And what? No titles. What were the themes of the two songs you wrote today?
Very different things. The first song was sort of about death.
Mm.
The second song was like a country life song.
I can't wait for that country life one. I'm predicting a hit. Are you, Mike?
I'm waiting for the death one.
Oh, okay. And some could be both.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. That's it. That's the end of the show. At Jammy Rabbins on Instagram. Jammy Rabbins. I don't know who has Remy Jabbins. At Jammy Rabin, songwriter, producer, publisher, Lillian Ridge's dad, and Sarah's husband.
Yeah, all those things.
There it is. But most importantly, those last things.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Jimmy.
Thank you.
And I'm glad your headphones worked.
Yeah, that was great.
For the last 7 minutes.
I really liked the ending better.
This festival and concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop before attending your next concert. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. Stop by your local Tecovas store. Have a complimentary drink. Shop new styles. If you can't make it to a store, just visit tecovas.com. T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. You can probably spell it. You probably know it. Tecovas.com.
Find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Welcome to 500 Greatest Songs, a podcast based on Rolling Stone's hugely popular, influential, and sometimes controversial list. I'm Brittany Spanos.
And I'm Rob Sheffield. We're here to shed light on the greatest songs ever made and discover what makes them so great.
From classics like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams to the Ronettes' Be My Baby, and modern day classics like The Killers' Mr. Brightside.
Listen to Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, acclaimed comics writer and notorious Scott Summers hater, Rosie Knight.
Well, hello, Emmy-winning podcaster and totally unbiased Targaryen royal supporter, Jason Concepcion.
Somehow the X-Ray Vision podcast has returned.
And like always, we'll be here every week.
You'll hear from TV writers, actors, comics creators, pop culture critics.
Nothing is off the table.
Listen to X-Ray Vision on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.